This is the PBT Podcast, the most comprehensive and entertaining 30 minutes on the NBA anywhere. From insights to interviews, we've got you covered. Here are your hosts, Pro Basketball Talk's Kurt Helin and Eitan Shander.
We are back, another edition, an NBA Finals edition, to make it right here on the PBT Podcast alongside Kurt Helin, Eitan Shander, and it is that time of year. We have finally got here, and it's deja vu all over again from last year, Kurt, and we know the players, the major storylines that we'll all get into here. The biggest news, I think, coming before Game 1 off the court is what Tony Parker said about his health and his availability, which I think before we even get to Game 1 would be just a minor detail if he weren't able to go.
Yeah, like you can go a half about like they did in Game 6, you know, without him. They'll get Manu Ginobili can be essentially the de facto point guard, and you can get good play out of you know, Corey Joseph and Patty Mills, but they're not beating the Heat in any form and length without Tony Parker. And I think some of the people picking the Heat in the media I've seen have said this is all kind of Tony Parker dependent. I don't know that he's 100%. He says he is playing in Game 1, but he will not be 100%. But he is good to go. We will see how much that holds him back, if at all, or if they end up limiting his minutes. They kind of catch a break having those 5 days off. So I still think you're going to see a pretty good Tony Parker.
Yeah, I think the biggest question right now, and this is just part of the nature of where we are in the season, is how much can a day or two really help for a guy if we see a recurring and nagging like we saw and kind of take us all out of the blue at OKC, where we thought, okay, things are fine, and then we get that word at half, he's not coming back. Now, granted, it's the finals, it's the rematch. I don't know how much more he pushes it. I don't know how much more he would be able to push it. So I guess the question right now would be, yes, great, he comes back Game 1, but where are we going to be with this guy Game 3, Game 5?
Yeah, and as you well know, as everybody listening well knows, because I'm sure everyone listening has sprained their ankle as well. Once you do, it is more susceptible to a sprain until it is well past fully healed. You know, those ligaments have to tighten up. You know, it was Steph Curry's problem. He never let it get, and it never got all the way back to where it was, and it just kept getting worse and worse. So we'll see. I mean, it's not going to be right, but can he tape it up and give them enough? They also catch, and again, it's the joy of the finals schedule. You know, they play Thursday and then they're off till Sunday. I mean, there's a few more days off in there to really, you know, get rested before, you know, that horrible Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday schedule they're on. You know, they, right. Oh my gosh, we almost have to play every other day and then we get a few days off.
Yes, which is good for us, and it's kind of, you know, it's good for them too, because I have to say, if an extra day or two means that Tony Parker is more healthy and yeah, we're going to get an extra 4 or 5 or 8 quality minutes from Manu, or that's the difference between Wade at 100% versus 90%. Kurt, honestly, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the NBA has been on this Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday thing for a while, but I'm with you. What matters to me right now is that the best team finds a way to win and is healthy, and it's not decided because, you know, Tony Parker's hobbling around. And by the way, you mentioned the other guys. I mean, it's good for Wade's knees. It's good for Manu, who's older, and Timmy, who, you know, Tim Parker, who Tim Duncan, who's older. It's also on the other side. Don't forget about Chris Anderson, who's been fighting a. You know, he played only 13 minutes in Game 6. He's been fighting that thigh bruise. He didn't practice Monday. He went through limited reps Tuesday. He's not 100%, so this time off is good for him as well.
Yeah, and I think for the fans, too, it trickles down, and we're just going to see better basketball, and I don't see too many people complaining by any means. Where do we really begin here? And I say that because it's not often do we get a team that loses with so many, just when you look at Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan, and we mentioned Parker and Ginobili and what the Spurs have been able to do, to then come back and of all teams get the one that they wanted. And then, oh, by the way, we're talking about LeBron James. James and Wade and company looking at a possible three-peat, despite Horace Grant saying that they're not in his neighborhood yet. It's still something that it's a hell of an accomplishment when you look at where they'll stand in history. I don't know. It's almost like I don't recall in recent memory a finals where both teams have so much at stake if they lose.
And win. I mean, this is, if you're talking about the Spurs, you're talking about a 15-year span of five titles and that kind of, I mean, that's as close as you're ever going to get in this era, in the salary cap era, to the Celtics of the 50s and 60s. I mean, this is a legendary run of fantastic. I mean, they've won 50 games every year except for, you know, a lockout year. They've been amazing for such a long stretch of time. And on the flip side, I mean, look, as we have talked about before, LeBron is in legacy mode.
Yes.
LeBron is all about – now it's all about both titles and, you know, the all-NBA teams and the MVPs and the legacy and just where he's going to go down in history among the greatest. And a three-peat puts him and this Heat team way, way up the ladder. So they both – I think they, you know, they maybe take some hit if they lose, but whoever wins gets a huge legacy boost out of this.
Yeah, and it's almost like the Spurs would take less. Now, I still think we would examine really as much as we'd say, okay, the five versus what they've already accomplished now. But it's very difficult, despite what it would do to solidify, at least for the time being, Miami's legacy with LeBron. It's still two straight trips to the finals and two losses for San Antonio. Yeah. And that's how it ends as well. And you know, that's just how our memories work as fans and watching this game and writing and covering it. It doesn't matter. It's always the last thing, you know. It's tough to kind of block out Jordan, despite scoring, you know, 19-20 a game, just those Wizards moments, right, as opposed to the Bulls. So I wonder if what happens here, how much we really do focus on the last 2 years when it's all said and done about San Antonio, despite everything that they've accomplished and despite the great story of just longevity.
Yeah, I think there would be some of that. There would be it would be a kind of a bitter ending to them. Although I will say, I think you'll see that whole group back next year. And so, and I don't think, you know, with the way they've set this team up now, you know, we did a great post by Dan Feldman at PBT where he, you know, if you weight their age by minutes played, the Heat play older guys, bigger minutes. If you weight it by age, they're the older team in playing minutes because the Spurs give so many minutes to Kawhi Leonard and so many minutes to Danny Green and so many minutes to Iago Splitter and these guys who are not old, and they limit the minutes for their older players. Where the Heat, that's a tight rotation, and some older guys like Ray Allen and Shane Battier get big minutes during the season for them. So I think the Spurs could do it one more year. I think they're all going to come back, but it's just tough to say that out in the West, because the Clippers are probably get better and the Thunder will probably get better. And this may be their last run at this thing.
It's going to be interesting to see it, right? Especially when, if they're, for whatever reason, down in the series and, you know, see if they have it, you know, the last gasp there, or knowing that they're going to come back and kind of how that plays out as well. And you mentioned the Heat, and you know, I'm curious, are we past the point where it matters how LeBron wins this third title if he were to win his third one in a row? You know, does it matter anymore how – not necessarily how he plays. I mean, if he stinks it up, clearly that's a topic of conversation right there at the top. But if it's not dominating every single second of the game and other – maybe it's a Dwayne Wade or maybe it's Rashard Lewis's turn to come up with a couple of big moments. I don't know what it means. But are we past that point where we start to analyze how LeBron James does it despite that he's doing it?
I would like to think we're moving past that, just because it's unrealistic to expect him to carry the go back. You know, everybody talks about Jordan. Go back and watch those Bulls teams. Those Bulls teams were good. That team had a lot going on around Jordan that allowed, I mean, look, arguably greatest player of all time, helped lead that team to excel at a new level. But then the first year he's playing baseball, they won 55 games, made the second round of the playoffs. He was the guy who was able to elevate that a couple of levels up, but it wasn't a terrible team. there's probably even more on LeBron. If you took LeBron off this team, well, they'd make the playoffs because they're in the East probably, but they'd be terrible.
They really would be.
I mean, he's carrying such a load with this team that I think even if he's not exceptional, frankly, if he's not exceptional, I don't know that they can win the series.
I don't want to take anything away from what he's done. His career stands alone. But going on the notion of there's this heavier load for LeBron to carry this year, it's more so, I think, that in a lot of these teams that we see one guy, and again, you can go to Jordan, but this would be the year, I think, LeBron, and especially if other guys stood out and it was LeBron's doing, that would stand out even more, I think, on LeBron's side, right? Because he's making guys that he automatically has to carry a lot of weight for, but they're actually being able to succeed because of what he's able to do. It's almost like he's doing it both ways. I think that would stand out even more. I don't know if you could find a team in recent memory that relied on one guy that was so successful like this.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he's the one. Frankly, he's the one guy who can do this. I mean, Kobe certainly carried those Lakers and was the star for not the Shaq years. He had a real, you know, odd, that was another great team with not only Shaq but all those veterans around him. He was certainly more the leader of the second time around, but with Pau Gasol. But I mean, again, they don't win without, you don't make three straight finals without Pau Gasol, and there were some solid veteran players and guys who stepped up around that. LeBron carries, and he's going to carry it on both ends of the floor, but it's going to be interesting to see. He's going to have to be exceptional this series, because remember what they did to him last series? They went, and they will do it this series, they go under every pick. They play back off of him. They will go ahead and take the 18-footer. We will give you the 18-footer. We'll sort of contest it, but not all that much. We'll give you the mid-range shot and dare you to beat us from there, because everybody knows he's the best finisher in the game around the rim. And the same with Wade if he gets in the paint. Play off them. Make them beat you as jump shooters. If they can't, you know, and if they fall into that trap, you know, that's the Heat's problem. That's their challenge. I mean, they won Game 7 last year, but LeBron took 3 shots in the paint in Game 7 and 20 outside of it. And the Heat, the Spurs and Popovich will live with that ratio every day of the week.
Yeah, yeah. Now, he was able to score a lot of, what was it, 69, 70 points the last two games that he was able to score. But you're saying as far as at the rate in which the points come and where they come, how much different is that this year? I mean, how much have we talked about it? Has everybody looked at the improved jumper and the confidence in that jumper? You know, if LeBron's hitting it and if that's a knockdown shot, does he continue to take it? Does he continue to do that? Or is this just, you know, does that notion to come back in and try to drive or try to facilitate and maybe move away from something that works kind of fall back in?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think that Eric Spoelstra is smart and LeBron James is smart. They know what's coming, and they've got to have some plans to get some shots in closer and to do some things to, even if it means posting LeBron up, which is, you know, depending on who's guarding him, could, you know, with Kawhi, but is, you know, they'll look, if they're going to post him up, the double's coming, and then how do you, you know, get the ball out of his hands and keep it out of Ray Allen's hands? So and Chris Bosh will be the other part of that. I mean, he averaged 24 points a game against the Spurs during the regular season. I think he was 19 of 26 shooting in their two games. If he's knocking down those mid-range and LeBron's knocking down those shots, it's tough to beat the Heat. If they can get to the rim, they're going to do all this in transition. If they're knocking down jumpers, there's not much you can do.
No, and what do you do? Do you go small and try to counter that and give up some size and maybe?
They are. I remember they even did that again last season. I think you'll see that again this year. You will not see a lot of – they'll start this way to start the series, but you're not going to see a lot of Tiago Splitter and Tim Duncan together for extended periods.
But see a lot of Duncan on Bosh.
Stuff, yeah. They're gonna match that and go small. Some Bonner, some of that, but a lot of Boris Diaw, who gives them the advantage of going small without actually going small.
Yeah, and he was such a key in that Thunder series, right? So
yeah,
you look at it again, and he's their guy that I think, especially coming off the bench and preventing some and causing, I should say, some matchup problems, as you mentioned there. That I think is a guy who clearly we can be looking at it as a tremendous X factor. I'm not going to go as far as say where Danny Green was before that Ray Allen 3 in Game 6. but you know, he could be a guy, depending on health as well, for other people in Tony Parker as well, depending on where productivity needs to come from. You know, he could be a guy that comes in and has a huge series and could be a difference maker.
Exactly. And I think that this is one of the interesting parts of the series, because you just hit on the nail. You hit the nail on the head. You're like, well, they can go to Boris Diaw, and they've got Danny Green, who probably will have a good series. And Popovich has just more weapons to play with. I mean, we haven't gotten, you know, Manu Ginobili, who really struggled in those finals last year, but was fantastic through these playoffs. If he's, and even if he doesn't keep his form from the last series, if he's good, you know, and not 8 turnovers in game 6 bad, that's a huge boost for the Spurs. But Popovich just has more weapons at his disposal, and he can throw whatever matchups you throw at him, whatever you try to do, he can have counters just because he trusts his depth. And I think that you saw this in the second half of game 6, they've played that depth all year long. They've trusted Corey Joseph and you know, Patty Mills to go play point guard in some key minutes and given them a lot of chances. So when it's game 6 of the Western Conference Finals and they're like, you guys have to go, it's not some sort of shock to their system. They're like, all right, well, we know what we're going to do. We've played with these guys during the year.
All right, so you're bringing up some matchups, and it's interesting because there are a couple that are jumping out. And what do you think is more important here for – and nobody's going to stop LeBron by any means, but
yeah.
Is it Kawhi Leonard trying to, you know, disrupt, annoy, bother, and not in the Lance Stephenson mode by any means, but you know, to irritate LeBron, make things – and he'll get help, but to try to do that? Or is it somebody, and maybe it's Danny Green, right, to try to – make Dwayne Wade just break a little bit more of a sweat on defense?
Yeah, well, I think that Danny Green on Wade becomes big on both ends. The Spurs owned that series, I mean, that matchup pretty much most of last playoffs. I mean, Wade put up numbers, but he wasn't as explosive as he's been this season. Certainly wasn't shooting as high a percentage. He's shooting almost, better than 51% in these playoffs. If he's playing like that and getting inside the paint, that's a huge problem. So I think a lot falls on Danny Green. But I think you're right. I mean, they're going to look, and this is the reason, and we haven't gotten to predictions, but the reason I'm taking the Spurs in this is that Danny Green and these guys will make them work on defense in a way they haven't yet. And the Heat defense hasn't been nearly as crisp as last year. They're giving up 5 more points per 100 possessions compared to last year in the playoffs, almost 5, just shy. That's a lot of points. That's a lot they're giving up. They have looked better the last 3 games. If there's one team that can flip the switch, it's the Heat. But I tend to think they just haven't been there consistently.
So you have the Spurs. How many games?
You know, it's funny. I was saying the other day, it's like my first thought when I looked at this and how they're playing right now versus how the Heat – I think the other advantage, and a lot of people are like, oh, the Heat are rested. Well, but they haven't been tested either. They have not had to execute at as high a level, I think, as San Antonio. Just look, San Antonio faced a bigger challenge in Dallas in the first round than the Heat may have through the whole, you know, Eastern Conference Finals. So I think the Spurs just come in being forced to execute at a higher level, and I think that that gets them not only a game one win, but I think that they come in a little sharper. And I was saying I would have picked the Spurs in 5, except for that whole LeBron James thing. So I'm saying 7 because I think I respect LeBron that much. It could be 6, but I respect what LeBron can potentially do enough that I'm going to say 7.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. And I think the more I talk to people, the more I feel like I'm in the minority here. And again, I haven't checked the latest big board in Vegas as far as the odds
are.
The
Spurs are the favorite. So at least they opened that way.
Yeah, exactly. And they still are. And you know, I think it's like both are in the minus as far as the money line is concerned. So that should just tell you. I haven't seen how much the money has been on the San Antonio Spurs as opposed to the Heat. But you know, it's funny. I think clearly you're right that the Spurs have been tested more and they've had a tougher road here to the finals. But I think that they may have needed that more. Whereas the Heat, yes, the East is weak, but they are back in a familiar setting against a familiar team. And again, it may not be game one. It may be game 3 that it happens. But I do believe that we'll see a championship LeBron and we'll see a guy who still is on the upside. And I think that I am, and again, I could be huge, totally off on this, but I need to defer to LeBron until he gets knocked off. As cheap as that sounds.
No, but that's completely... That's not, I don't think that's cheap at all. I think that that's completely legitimate, and you're not the only person. I mean, there are people I thoroughly respect, including guys like David Thorpe at ESPN, who's a friend, you know, buddy of mine, who are essentially saying that. Like, and LeBron is the best player on the planet, and he can enforce his will on this series.
Here's the thing, though. I think the most difficult, and I would say Heat in six. So you've got Spurs in seven. I have Heat.
I think
six.
The Heat. Yeah, if the Heat win this,
it has to be in six.
They don't want to do it in seven. In you know,
right? And that's
they're not the LA Kings. They don't want to go seven on the road.
Exactly right. And, you know, Kings wind up winning that way too. So here's the thing, though. The biggest question I have, as far outside of the actual players in the court, and this plays into the prediction, and as far as why, if they're going to win it, Miami's going to do it in six, is the 2-2 and then the 1-1-1 format. And, you know, I think Miami has to win in San Antonio in the first two games. If they split, or if they go, you know, 2-0 and then 2-2 and both teams win at home, game five to win in San Antonio for Miami with a tie 2-2 and them not winning in San Antonio in the first two games, that's going to be immensely difficult for, I think, Miami to do that.
Actually, I agree. It's going to be interesting to see how the 2-2-1-1-1 format changes things. Both sides complain that, oh, no, the other team has the advantage. I always thought the team with the three in the middle, that's a tough spot to be, because you know, theoretically, if you're trying to protect home court, that's winning three in a row against what is inevitably a good team that came out of the other conference. And I think that that's a really – it's a bigger disadvantage than just being gone. So I think going back to this format – helps the Heat, but you're right. They need a split. They need to steal one of those first two. Game five would be difficult, but they do not, you know, the last thing they want is to have to do game seven. It's going to be very difficult to win, I think, that game in San Antonio.
It's funny, right? All this talk about game seven and home court with the Indiana Pacers, and here we are starting the NBA Finals and playing, at least at the surface, at the start, a much bigger role as opposed to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a little different. I think the Spurs are a tad better than the Pacers, but it's going to be, like I said, I really do believe it's – I'm picking the Spurs in seven, but it's as close to a coin toss series as you're going to find. The Heat have, I mean, again, Wade's back and healthy, didn't have that last year. LeBron's probably is playing at a potentially higher level. They've got some real matchup, and that's what makes this interesting, is that these two teams almost pick up in terms of X's and O's. You know, normally you spend the first four games kind of figuring out, and Yuma did this and I do that. I'm not sure it even lasts that long in this series, because they already know each other so well. They're already so much the teams they were, that it really just will come down to execution really quickly.
Two teams that know each other, as you said, like the back of their own hand. Very little injury concern, at least everybody outside Tony Parker, but he's good to go. We're at the beginning of the week right now. Can we just get to it?
Yeah, I know. Let's just start this thing. I'm ready to go.
All right, so before we get going, it's Kurt who has the Spurs in seven. I have the Heat in six, and we'll be back later in the week with game one to at least look at and see how that went. So for Kurt Heelan, Eitan Shander, it is the PBT podcast on ProBasketballTalk.NBCSports.com.